This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Ahead this hour, we'll find out what President Obama's proposal to end the NSA's bulk phone data collection could mean for national security.
But first, it's a look at our relationship with death, why we fear it on the one hand and find ourselves fascinated on the other.
Our next guest went on a journey to learn about Americans' evolving customs when it comes to death, burial, and memorials. She writes about it in her new book, American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning.
Kate Sweeney is a reporter and producer at WABE in Atlanta, and she joins us from her studio there. Kate, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, what inspired you to set off and explore the topic of death in the first place?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm not a really gloomy person. And so, you know, I wasn't hanging out in a lot of cemeteries wearing black and listening to the Smiths, although I do like visiting cemeteries a great deal. Really, I think what started me out is I like sort of realms of little known facts. And if there's any realm of little known facts that is sort of ripe for the picking in the United States of America right now, it is funeral present and the funeral world past. You know, sort of before I knew what was happening, I sort of became a miniature expert in things like the history of embalming fluid and everything that goes into making a funeral what it is. And that was so much fun and really, really fascinating. And then sort of, I guess the other part to that was as I kept going and got stories of folks who found themselves involved with death and memorialization to write the book, I found myself asking myself, okay, why are you really writing this? And I think that one answer was there I was in my late 20s, early 30s, someone who'd never really experienced catastrophic loss. And since it's one of those things for which there is no cut and dry answer for how do you handle this, the next best thing I think is we get stories from each other. Okay, well, what did you do? What did you do? And I think on some level, that is another reason that I wrote the book.
Looking at the history, the story you tell about how things have changed, it seems like there's a theme that we look back and things maybe look kind of creepy back then, but death was a lot closer to our daily lives, and now it's way more separate and isolated from our daily lives.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look back in, say, the 1800s, which we think of as the heyday of sort of death culture in the United States, and it really was. I mean, this is the time when the cemetery, as we know it, was invented. This is the time when the deathbed scene was invented. But people saw a lot more death in their everyday lives back then, certainly. And then around the turn of the century, something interesting happened is death really started to move out of the house. And dying did as well. People, rather than dying at home, began to die in hospitals. There was a room in the house called the parlor. This was the room where you might court your sweetheart, where you might get married, and then your funeral might take place. And so as the first standalone funeral businesses started to come to be, they called themselves funeral parlors, named after that room. And then, you know, a few years later, you know, as folks were looking at the parlor, the house, when people were becoming a little bit more removed from the processes of death and dying, there was actually a concentrated move. Let's change the name of this room from the parlor to the living room. And I remember hearing about that, and it just kind of blew my mind. I was like, wow. So this really was an intentional move, you know, away from death sort of being in our everyday lives.
Right. And it seems to correspond with us becoming less and less comfortable with death. And then if I look at another example that you write about, you know, people used to wear hair jewelry of their loved ones who'd passed on, and they were fine with that.
Right. And that even, it even still makes me uncomfortable, even as I understand it more than I did when I started the book. There was a moment in the book where I find myself standing in the Museum of Funeral Customs in Springfield, Illinois, and I'm in this room kind of surrounded by pieces of hair jewelry, and I'm kind of looking at them and figuring out, oh, it's a watch fob. Where's the hair? And then I realized, oh my goodness, the entire thing is made from human hair. Because nowadays, you know, we might craft or, you know, have ordered a piece of jewelry with, you know, someone's ashes in them. But there's something a little more visceral about having a necklace or a watch fob or a tiara or a wreath over your fireplace made of, you know, someone's hair. Because you look at ashes, you think, ashes. You look at hair, you think of the person upon whose head that hair was. And yeah, certainly we've definitely become less comfortable.
You mentioned the Museum of Funeral Customs. You spend a lot of time there working on the book. It looks like it is passed on, unfortunately, before I got to visit it in Illinois. But what did you learn from there? What kind of things were on display?
Well, I mean, this was really, so many things in the Museum of Funeral Customs. The curator there told me it takes most people about 45 minutes to walk through the display, and it took me more than 2 hours because it was so fascinating. So, one thing was just sort of this world of all of this Victorian stuff. This was really the era of when somebody died, you knew what to do because there were set rules for death and memorialization, and it was a normal part of life. And so the museum was filled with one entire section of memorial clothing, just black things that people wore. There was a material called funeral crepe that was scratchy and uncomfortable, and it was uncomfortable and ugly on purpose. And funeral crepe was made, strangely enough, of silk, the most beautiful of fabrics, made intentionally into the most ugly and uncomfortable of fabrics on purpose because it was for mourning.
But it seemed like the Victorians really knew their way around death. They do, you know, we talked about being comfortable. They seemed like they were incredibly comfortable and had this very rich culture around death. What could we learn from the Victorians?
I think if we could learn anything from the Victorians, it might be to appreciate the idea of the good death a little more. And the good death was a concept that was extremely important to folks in the 1800s. And this was the idea of dying, ideally, in their time, at home, surrounded by loved ones, and then also ideally, because this was influenced by evangelical Christianity, being saved. But sort of this idea of you know, dying at home in relative comfort and surrounded by our loved ones, that's something we just don't see anymore today. And I think that's a reason that we might be a little bit alienated from death. Certainly, you know, I don't envy the Victorians everything. I don't envy them. There was one rule for funeral etiquette and mourning etiquette that, you know, if you were the second wife of a husband and his first wife's parents died, there were particular mourning rules that you had to follow. You were then in mourning, you know, whether or not you wanted to be. And I don't envy this idea of maybe having 12 children and losing 9 of them. I don't envy that death rate. But you know, for being surrounded by death, as people tended to be, and, you know, experiencing things like the Civil War, it was a part of everyday life. It was an expected part of life. A lot of people that I talked to for this book who had experienced catastrophic loss in the here and now sort of kept telling me the same thing, that they didn't feel just sad and in mourning and in grief when they lost loved ones. They felt sort of bewildered, you know, kind of set off into the wilderness, like they weren't a part of regular society anymore. And people didn't really know what to do with them because, I mean, nowadays, you know, you go to a funeral and then you're expected to return to work and sort of behave in a normal manner. And you're not really sure how to behave and people aren't sure how to behave toward you. So it might be a matter of incorporating death, which is a normal part of life, back into sort of everyday life.
And you introduced us to a person who tried for a while to help people do that, a tattoo artist who specialized in memorial tattoos.
Yes, Sarah Peacock. That was amazing because I was having these conversations with her about really, she was telling me serious stories about people in grief and in mourning. And instead of sort of talking in these quiet, hushed tones, we were shouting at each other over the din of the needles as she and her coworkers, you know, did their work. But one really cool story with Sarah Peacock, one tattoo that she did was on the back of this biker named Randy, and it was the traditional biker tattoo of a sprawling graveyard scene, and you saw the gravestones, but they weren't filled in yet, and he would get each one filled in basically as his biker buddies rode on off to that rally in the sky as they died. And then later on, I think it was after I saw this tattoo. Later on, I was reading about memorial quilts, colonial memorial quilts. And one motif you'd see again and again was the graveyard quilt. And this is actually an illustration in the book of a quilt made to look like a graveyard, and there are coffins around the edge of the quilt, and they're embroidered with the names of the members of the family. And then as each person died, they're moved to the center of the quilt, upon which is embroidered a graveyard. So, you know, you sort of see these same ideas sort of repeat themselves again and again in history, which I just found amazing.
We're talking with Kate Sweeney, author of American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning. And we want to hear from you. What customs do you and your family practice when it comes to remembering, memorializing a loved one? What questions do you have about the way we cope with death? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org.
We're talking now with Kate Sweeney. She's the author of American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning. And we want you to join the conversation with us as well. Does death both fascinate and scare you? And what traditions did you turn to when a loved one died? Was there a tribute that touched you, maybe in particular at a funeral? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll go now to our callers and take Bruce joining us in Richland Center. Hi, Bruce.
Hello. Hey, I just wanted to share a little story about my grandfather's death a few years ago. He had a nice full life and died at 92. He had 9 children and countless number of grandchildren. And he died in his home surrounded by his 9 children. He was on his deathbed. I guess we used the living room as a parlor. As he was passing his final breaths, his children all sang to him as he was passing, and it was very impactful on me. It was beautiful, you know.
Yeah, that does sound beautiful.
Wow.
And like something, one of these stories that we might have heard with Kate Sweeney in the book, is that something that used to be more common, what Bruce is describing?
I think so. I mean, people certainly died a lot more often at home. You know, in earlier generations, for sure. You know, you think about things like the Civil War, in which people suddenly their loved ones were dying far away, and you know, and folks didn't know necessarily, you know, where they were or in what state they had died. And you see correspondence between fellow soldiers and family members about that, because people just really, really wanted to know. Okay, well, how did he die? And and so certainly back then, yeah, you would see ideally folks sort of having the kind of experience that Bruce described. That was really poignant. Thank you.
Bruce, thank you so much for sharing that story. We'll go to Darlene in Viola now. Darlene, hi.
Yes, hi. I have a comment regarding an experience with my mother when she died a number of years ago. I did a little bit of research to find out what is involved in embalming a body after death, and my mother always wanted a closed casket, number one. Number two, even if she didn't, I did refuse to have her body desecrated by having the internal organs removed, and to have her body preserved and to made to look plastic-like so that people would remember what she looked like in death rather than in life.
And Kate, there's a controversy among some people, at least, over embalming and over how people are presented in open caskets. I think you touch on that a little in your book.
Certainly. I mean, you have these two camps at work today. One really rising trend is the green burial movement. And when I first started following this in 2007, there were 4 green burial cemeteries in the United States. And then when I called somebody from the Green Burial Council last year to sort of follow up on this, I found out that there are 40 now. And when I'm talking about green burial, I'm talking about ecologically friendly burial. And there are dedicated green burial cemeteries across the country now. They do not allow embalming or anything that doesn't biodegrade completely down to nothing. So often, you know, wicker caskets or pine caskets or just a shroud. And they really actually also encourage families to be involved in the interment, in the burial, you know, to dig the grave or to fill in the grave and to be as involved as they wish to be. And so that's a really interesting trend to see rising today.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And let's go next to Kate in Sussex. Hi, Kate. I'm sorry, Sue. Sorry.
Hi.
Sue, hi. Kate is our guest. Hi, Sue. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Actually, on that same vein, I'm widowed. My husband died at the age of 48 from cancer. And it was we both are very big into ecology, and we tried to live as green as possible. And it was so important to him. He actually has a family member, an uncle and cousins who are in the funeral industry, and he had a particular aversion toward it because of his experiences with that when he was growing up. He felt that it was just not, he thought it was really not a pleasant situation. So he chose green burial before he passed away, and we did a lot of investigating. Mm-hmm. And he was able to not be embalmed. We even had potted trees around his wooden casket that was made by the monks over in Iowa. And there were little crosses carved out of the wood that we all got to keep. And it was all able to be naturally, you know, going back to the earth. So it was very, very special that he was able to do this. It meant a lot to him.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that experience, Sue. And lots of little details there about the different ways green burials can unfold. I know for some people you have to make sure that a green burial is allowed in a particular, you know, say, cemetery. What other things do people need to know about green burial if they want to do it, Kate?
Well, I mean, I know there are certain dedicated green burial cemeteries across the country, and there's a website that the Green Burial Council, if you look them up, they can really sort of give you lots of details on the ins and outs of those. A lot of green burial cemeteries actually do allow cremated remains as well. But I think that there is a widespread misconception that if a body is not cremated, then it must be embalmed. And that's not required in any of the 50 states. And so that's a good thing for folks to sort of disabuse themselves of. Another widely held misconception is that, you know, you must have a vault around the casket. That is a regulation that a lot of cemeteries have in place, and most cemeteries indeed. And here's a sort of interesting historic fact. Vaults were invented back in the 1800s to prevent grave robbers. But as time has gone on, you know, that's not so much an issue anymore. And cemeteries use them because they prevent the ground from really sinking in around a casket after it is buried. Although a lot of funeral directors will sell vaults based on other merits, on body preservation, on, you know, this vault or that vault's ability to keep a body safe somehow from the elements, you know, from oxygen or from water. And so that's kind of an interesting thing to see, you know, it kind of makes you think about our relation to the days of the Egyptians.
We'll go back to our callers now with Rebecca in Oconto Falls. Rebecca, hi.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. Did you have a story for us?
Yep. I actually have a story about my great-grandmother's burial. She died on her 103rd birthday. So, of course, she knew that she was going to die old, and she had said for many years that all of us better not dare give her an open casket because she didn't want people to stand there and be like, oh, she looked so good. She goes, I'm over 100. I'm not going to look good when I'm dead. It's just impossible. And then as we went through, you know, picking out caskets and stuff, and my grandmother, of course, did all this, my great-grandmother had a dress picked out that she was going to wear, and it was teal. And my grandmother picked out an aquamarine casket. So, of course, through the funeral, my sister and I are sitting there giggling because her dress actually clashed with her casket, and that would have drove her insane.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that, Rebecca. So, Kate, are we more and more taking control over how our earthly afterlife is handled?
You know, Rob, I think so. And I think what we're seeing is this trend with the baby boomer generation. This is the generation that, you know, made so many social changes take place and also really wanted to take charge of many rites of passage in their own lives. You know, these are folks who reinvented, you know, the home home birth and things like getting married on the beach. And so, you know, looking at this last rite of passage, you know, folks really want to take charge of that as well, and death and dying, and say, you know, this is going to happen, but I'd like for it to happen on my terms.
Kay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
We've been talking to Kate Sweeney, author of American Afterlife, Encounters in the Customs of Mourning. She joined us from the studios of WABE in Atlanta.